for August 23rd, 2016. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasenflum.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, college football season's starting, Chip. You ready for some football?
I heard. I think I'm going to throw a boomerang or something.
Oh, we got special games coming up this week.
Oh, yes. It looks like we can head down to Australia for the first game of the season. It starts this Friday.
Nice.
Looks like the California Golden Bears are going to take on the Rainbow Warriors in Sydney, Australia. I think they're going to play in the Opera House.
I don't think they're going to play in the Opera House. I don't think there's going to be that much fancy to this. But you got Rainbows and Bears. The Rainbow Warriors are from Hawaii.
That's correct.
So they're a little bit closer to Australia than the California.
If you're going team to is. Watch that game here in Chicago, it's Friday night at 9 p.m.
Okay.
That means it's a 10 p.m. start on the Eastern Seaboard. Uh-huh. Holy cow. But anyway, it shows you how far Australia is.
It's on the other side of the world. That's
exactly
how that works.
It's on the bottom of the world. Or on the top, if they want to say it.
That's right.
But that's not the only game that's overseas. The following week is when it looks like college football really starts. This is just an opening game. But it looks like Boston College and Georgia Tech are going to be in Ireland. And you'll be able to watch that game at 6:30 a.m. in the morning.
In the morning, Central Time.
Saturday morning.
Saturday morning football.
On September 3rd. That's just... That's Labor Day weekend.
Okay.
But anyway, from there, the whole day kind of kicks off. Anyway, so you can tell universities are starting. Obviously, we've got all the elementaries and middle schools.
High schools and middle schools and elementary schools are all back in school. I've been as busy as I could possibly be.
Sure.
And they're going to start playing football, too.
Well, up here they are. We've got our high school starts this coming Friday also. So all the fun stuff. Looks like the activities are started.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe fall's coming.
Yeah, certainly seems that way. I got my Oktoberfest from Sam Adams this week, so I'm ready. I'm ready. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week, and you got a chance to see the Hitchcock-Truffaut movie. We talked about this months ago.
Yeah, I think it came out last December, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, this is a documentary about Truffaut's interest in writing a book about Alfred Hitchcock. Now, both of these gentlemen are directors. Hitchcock is probably 25 years older than Truffaut.
Okay.
So sort of a gentleman at the beginning of his career and a gentleman sort of towards the end of his career. Hitchcock only had three more films after this this interview and book. And Truffaut basically was interviewing Hitchcock and put him as a master of the craft. And so we get a lot of insights on how they go through individual films, decisions that Hitchcock made. Very fascinating sort of inside look, intellectual look at Hitchcock's work, which we, before that, they typically thought of it as good, but good pop stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically taking it up to the level of art. And Hitchcock laments that maybe he's too rigid in his structure on how he puts together his films. But there's just so many wonderful things to glean from this and to think about the art of directing. And what I really enjoyed about this is that it inspired me. I want to see more Alfred Hitchcock films, which I've seen a whole bunch of them.
I think I've probably seen pretty much every Hitchcock film at least once.
Really?
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a whole bunch of them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's probably
so
50
many.
Films.
I've seen a lot of those films. Maybe not all. Maybe I'm being facetious. But I've seen a lot of his episodes of the Alfred Hitchcock Show that was on TV for a long time. I've seen a lot of his work. And yes, he was a pretty brilliant director.
Well, I am interested, and I think towards October, that's going to be my monster stuff. Probably end up watching Vertigo again, probably watch The Birds.
Mm-hmm.
I think we talked about Psycho last year, but he's just a fascinating gentleman, and this is just a wonderful film talking about this. And there's a lot of interviews with other people surrounding this also. Very, very nice. Once again, if I 0 to 100, I would say this is 60s to 70s. Good stuff. Good stuff.
You also got to see another documentary. This is the really artistic people in the world. You got to see Meatloaf In and Out of Hell. This is a documentary that's currently on Showtime.
Yeah, it was recorded through BBC.
Okay.
You can actually watch it on Hulu also. And this is about the history of Meatloaf, his music, I should say. Mm-hmm. And also Jim Steinman, who was basically the writer. So if you listen to Bat Out of Hell, you know there's sort of this elevated, sort of like a Broadway musical approach to it.
Absolutely sounds like a Broadway musical. And he actually took it to Broadway and did a show that was just a one-man show of Meatloaf music on Broadway.
Okay. And this talks a little bit about the beginning of Meatloaf. He's this big, imposing guy mm-hmm. who certainly he's not going to be your teen idol type of person.
That's right.
But he is wearing this tuxedo looking, so he totally looks out of place, and he comes out and he sings Jim Steinman's songs mm-hmm. and gives them a real feeling to them. And they had a lot of success with that. Because of the success, they had started recording the next album. Meatloaf kind of walked away. It looked like there may have been a falling out. And Jim Steinman recorded what was going to be, I think, Bat Out of Hell 2, or whatever the second album was. Mm-hmm. Jim Steinman ended up recording it himself.
Really?
You can totally tell it's Jim Steinman, but he certainly did not have the presence. And this is a good example of writer, musician, who's very, very good, gifted, and then performer,
mm-hmm.
and what the difference is. And for some level, we like to have our writers and performers being the same person mm-hmm. because we like to say, oh, it's more authentic that way.
Sure.
But you cannot underestimate. I think American Idol and series like that kind of brought back why great presentation really elevates something.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be a great singer, but not particularly a gifted writer. And this went through all of Meatloaf's albums up to, probably right around Bat Out of Hell 3, maybe. I enjoyed listening to it. Meatloaf lost his house during it at one time early on, and he was touring bars and just to make things work. And then, we get Bat Out of Hell 2 with I'll Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That, mm-hmm. which was his reuniting with Steinman, and it really elevated him to a new level. Meatloaf also is, while a wonderful performer, can have some issues. I think he was in some show and just spaced out one time, and who knows? As you always say, the artists can be temperamental, and Meatloaf is a good example of that. But there's no doubt that they created a sound that was very good for them.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim Steinman, if he could find a singer, could probably write the rest of his lives, because he's very, very gifted at creating this Broadway-ish storytelling song writing style. By the way, they have Bonnie Tyler doing an interview in here. And her Scottish accent is very Scottish.
Yeah.
You never know that when she's singing.
That's right. It's amazing. That always amazes me, that the people who don't have American accents when they speak sound like Americans when they sing. Mm-hmm. There's so many examples of that.
But it sounds like that song was originally written with Meatloaf to sing that song.
I would listen to that song. It's a great song the mm-hmm. way it is. But yeah, I love Meatloaf. Okay. My nickname for a long time was Meatloaf.
Meathead.
Well, that's a different director. But
he's the Rob Reiner of musicians, of singers.
Meatloaf is a really fun performer. He always wanted to be an actor. He never wanted to be a singer.
By the way, they do talk about his performance in Fight Club, and how he left being a singer to have 10 years worth of being an actor, with Fight Club being like one of his defining performances.
A lot better than Black Dog. Mm-hmm. That was not a good movie.
Well, in fact, he says that he was, I think one of the jokes he says is, I was in 25 films and five of them were good. Yeah, something like that.
That's probably about right. He was in Rocky Horror Picture Show. He did a really good job in that.
Oh, that's right. It had Susan Sarandon.
That's right. So that is on Showtime. It's called Meatloaf In and Out of Hell. Sounds like you liked it.
And that came out last year, too. And on a 1 to 100, I would say it's 60, 72. Worthy of enjoying.
There you go. Opening this week, there's a couple of movies that are worthy of enjoying. The first one's called Southside With You. This looks like a really fun, interesting look at a love affair between two people. They just happen to be the President of the United States and the First Lady.
From Chicago.
From Chicago.
It takes place in Chicago.
Southside.
Starring Michelle Obama and... Well, Barack Obama.
It's not starring those two. This is a dramatization.
Oh, no. Oh, really?
This is a dramatization, but but their characters, I would be really interested to see the love affair between these two wonderful people.
Well, obviously, they come publicly, they come across very charming.
Oh, very.
And probably the best looking couple since John F. Kennedy and Jackie Onassis.
I agree.
Certainly not the Hollywood president of Reagan and Nancy. But still, this is interesting. Yeah, we're at the twilight of his presidency. So why not explore the first date?
Why not? It's a prequel.
That's right. grab Barack Obama and his kids, and we'll all go to the movie, and we'll watch our first date.
That's adorable.
Well, the trailer we were watching, you know, shows Barack Obama in this old Japanese car that's got a hole in the floor, and yeah, he came from a pretty humble route,
yeah.
Which is, if you need to be inspired on anybody can be president, this is a good example. I mean, I've been to Hope, Arkansas. I've seen where Bill Clinton, he had a regular home.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Jimmy Carter's home from when he was and he was very wealthy in the sense that they were farmers, but certainly very, while wealthy for the area, still a very modest background.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've seen some presidents' homes, and Barack Obama would be a good example of a person who came from modest means to hitting the highest office in the land.
That's right.
Public office. So this should be very fun.
I think I'm going to find a way to catch this one. Southside With You sounds like a fun movie. You found a couple of big cast movies that are coming out this week. The first one's called The Hollers.
Holla.
This is another one of those stories about a 30-something dealing with life in your 30s.
That's right. Son comes home, mm-hmm. So mom can go through surgery.
Right. We're all getting to that age where we're having to live life and worry about our elderly parents. And this is that kind of story.
I think so. It's got a huge cast. It looks like definitely something, if it was on Netflix or Hulu or something like that, I would probably pick up and watch. So mm-hmm. I look forward to it streaming.
You've got a... Anna Kendrick in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's always fun. You've got Dr. Ken. he's in there. Guess what he's playing? A doctor. That man is stuck playing a doctor in everything. You've got Josh Groban is in this movie.
He's going to be singing with a very deep voice. So John Krasinski is, he was a gentleman from The Office.
Yeah, and he directs this one and stars in it.
Well, there you go. So obviously he's stretching out a little bit too.
Yeah.
So this looks interesting. I look forward to it streaming or something of that nature. I probably will not go to the theater. But yeah, there's not a lot of choices this week.
Right. It is back to school time, and it's not going to the movies time, at least not for me. I have not been to a movie in weeks because I am way too busy, and so is everybody else. But those of you who have time, there's another big cast movie coming out called The Intervention. This one is about a couple that's having marital problems, and all their friends see it, and they don't. So they're going to do an intervention
for their marriage. Just like what we do last night with your family.
That's right. That's what we do. We have people over, and we tell them how they need to fix themselves.
That's right. Fix yourself. All right. Well, anyway, this looks interesting. Very, very big challenge. Chill-ish.
Yeah, they actually mentioned Big Chill in the trailer.
What we need is a soundtrack with it.
Yeah, there you go. Whatever the pop music of the day is.
But maybe maybe a soundtrack that is of our age, because mm-hmm. this seems like, of our contemporaries.
Yeah, this is another middle-age story about middle-age people going through middle-age issues.
There are a few other movies that are coming out this week, some horror movies and stuff. But
those are for the teenagers.
But really, this is a very modest week,
mm-hmm.
As far as delivery of mm-hmm. films. And we'll end up seeing these. In fact, I'll see all three of these at some point.
Mm-hmm. brings us to our book. At our book of the week, and you have been trying to make yourself better, as we all are, and you read Presto, How I Made Over 100 Pounds Disappear and Other Magical Tales by one Penn Jillette, one of our favorites.
Well, who doesn't love Penn Jillette?
I love Penn Jillette.
There's no doubt he comes across as a deep thinker and
storyteller.
Oh, beautiful storyteller. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Penn's a pretty big guy, or was at one time.
That's right.
In fact, the start of this is that he really didn't know what he weighed. He knew it was up of over 300, mm-hmm. and 330 is what he's estimated. It could have been more. Mm-hmm. So Penn's going to tell you, and in fact, if you've seen him, you've seen this dramatic loss, and he's lost over 100 pounds.
Wow.
So this is his rambling of what every person says, hey, Penn, what did you do?
Now, when you say rambling, you mean it in the best way possible, because Penn does ramble, but he rambles in such an entertaining way.
You get lots of fun stories, that's right. Way too much information at times.
That's right.
He's very good at sharing and making sure that he's very human, and you see him as a very human person. Mm-hmm. So he may have some wonderful skills. You may pay him to go see wonderful, exciting stuff. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, he wants you to know that, hey, listen, I'm a person just like you are, and I have challenges like you have challenges, except for I've got a book I've written that can share you on how I dealt with
that's
a challenge.
That's right.
And you've got an audience.
That's right.
So Penn talks a little bit about how he his blood pressure was up very, very high. He was on a number of pills, cholesterol pills and high blood pressure pills, and he was very worried about that, obviously. A person who's almost 60 years old says, listen, I got kids and what can I do to be around? So he's got this group of entrepreneurs and thinkers and people who are like Penn that he has created relationships over the years. So we've got to see some insight of that a few years ago with Tim's Vermeer, mm-hmm. where the gentleman basically recreated how we think that Vermeer did his paintings.
Yeah, it's a documentary. We'll put that one in the show notes too, because that was a really interesting look at all of this group of people.
Sure, and this is about Ray Cronus. And Ray was a gentleman who worked at NASA, so he obviously is a person who has some skills.
Sure.
And he lives in Alabama. He's not a medical doctor, and you need to really understand that he's not a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. But he has looked into why was he gaining so much weight, and so he created a strategy, basically studied himself, and then took his experience, and he also worked with Penn on a diet and a way to lose some weight. So ultimately, it comes down to a few things. One, Ray says that, hey, American, who eats the standard American diet?
Standard American diet.
The sad diet.
The sad diet.
It's got too much salt. Uh-huh. It's got too much sugar. It's got too much oil.
Fat. Yeah.
Yeah. So ultimately, this is playing into. So a person who, like Steve, like me, who starts out at a very reasonable weight when we're young, you weigh 150 pounds when you're 18, and then you turn 30, and now you're 200, mm-hmm. and then you're 250 by the time you turn 40, and mm-hmm. then 300 at 50, and then 350 at 60. Well, that is a result of, one, being in a very wealthy society. My goodness, calories are easy to come by. They're mm-hmm. relatively inexpensive. And you can eat your steak and lobster until you can't eat steak and lobster. There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. I mean, what I'm saying is that if you want to eat 10,000 calories a day, you can eat 10,000 calories a day and not think twice about it.
Right. It is a lifestyle that we have, and this book shows us how we might be able to change that, and some of the things that we know about the way the human body works and how we can use that to our advantage.
Well, anyway, so this week I went and had a physical at the doctor's office, and I had, if you followed us in the past, I've used MapMyFitness, where I've logged for over a year the amount of food I was eating, the calories I was eating, trying to stay around 2,000 calories a day. I was walking 6 to 7 miles a day for, pretty consistently doing that for over a year. I'd lost a lot of weight. But in January or so, I kind of jumped off and stopped logging my food. I stopped, I walk about 3 miles a day now versus walking 6 to 7 miles a day. And during that period, I gained back a lot of that I'd lost. Mm-hmm. And so this book came out like at the perfect time for me to jump on and just see what happened, because it was so dramatic, the loss. Now, obviously, with every diet or whatever, it comes to be a lifestyle change.
And that's right.
One of the things that ultimately Penn has done is he's not eating meat-based products anymore.
Correct.
So, but it starts off very simply, and you can do it if you'd like. You eat potatoes for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not because you're eating potatoes because it's kind of a hit on the Atkins diet.
Okay.
Where in the Atkins diet, the idea was you could eat meat and cheese and nuts and stuff like that, but you were to give up carbs.
Right.
And the ultimate carb that they use is potato.
Okay.
But really the reality of this is you can eat sweet potatoes or red potatoes or russet potatoes or gold potatoes. It doesn't matter what type of potato. You're eating potato. You can boil them. You can bake them. You can do it, you know, how you want. You can't use salt. You can't use sugar. And you can't use oil. But really what you're doing during this period of time is you're eating these things, and they're almost all water. So you drink water, you have coffee, you can drink tea, and you eat potatoes. You can eat them till you can't eat them anymore. You can buy a 5-pound bag, boil them, eat them all if you want to. You don't. You could, but I mean, most of us can't fit that much in our body.
Right.
But what you're doing is you're basically cleansing your palate and fasting for 2 weeks is really what it comes down to. But this is to set your body up so that, you know, you get to the next phase. And the next phase is you celebrate this 2 weeks by eating sweet corn.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea behind it is that the sweetness will blow you away. Like how much flavor food has without sugar, salt, and butter. And I can tell you that that's true, because I've been on this for, I'm on my fourth day now. I ate a little bit of mashed potatoes because I was hungry and I had to stop someplace, and I stopped a place and they had mashed potatoes. I asked what was in it. Obviously there's salt in it.
Uh-huh.
And I can tell you by eating a 1/2 pound of mashed potatoes, it could have been all salt.
Mm-hmm.
Because your body, the palate immediately goes, whoa,
mm-hmm.
This is incredible. So the standard American diet, the SAD diet, is just packed full of stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get through the 2 weeks, you have your sweet corn to recognize that food has incredible taste. Your diet could change dramatically. I mean, you can eat blueberries and spinach and whatever you want to eat on that level. And Penn describes that he eats so much, but it takes a lot of time. So if you're eating whatever salad you're eating, he's eating before his kids sit it down at the table. They eat their meals. He's eating after his kids do. But he's never hungry, because what basically you're doing is you're getting all the calories you need, but you know you're eating lots and lots of food is mm-hmm. what ultimately comes down to. You can have cheat days if you want to. If you wanted to go eat a steak, I guess he could. But he goes, what you'll really notice is just, whoa, it just blows you away about how we cook our food here mm-hmm. in the States. I love this. There's another part of this this book that talks a little bit about Ray Cronise, who thought this up. And experiences this too. He says that we never in the United States experience winter
mm-hmm.
because, you know, your house is warm.
Your car is warm. Your clothing is warm.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
And because of that, we never get what our bodies may have been designed through seasons
mm-hmm.
to have this fasting era.
Right, because we can have the food. We can have any kind of fruit we want any time of the year now. We have the availability. In the past, in the winter, you had a lot less to choose from.
Now, I'm going to argue that I don't know if this science holds up. I'm not going to argue with them on it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think of Muslims, they have fasting times. Many religions use fasting.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly don't have body shapes typically that are similar to American diets.
Right.
But any place that the American diet has been introduced,
mm-hmm. it immediately changes the people.
Oh, I mean, I'll think about it for
it's
what
it's good
it
logic.
Is.
We don't know if it's good science, but it's good logic.
One of the things Ray suggested you do is also taking cold showers. not that you have to be in a cold shower all the time, but what I mean is you have this cold shower to kind of jar your body. Now, we have winter coming, so it may be easy to just step outside.
Winter is coming.
But that's right, and it will be very cold. But really, the cold shower, and he uses Michael Phelps as your example. A guy, first of all, he's doing a tremendous amount of athletic swimming.
Mm-hmm.
He was eating 10, 12,000 calories and then working them off while swimming in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
But the pool is cool,
mm-hmm.
or cold. And so that's some way of thinking about that too. Listen, if you want to know more about it, read the book. I absolutely enjoyed it. It was a fast read.
Okay.
Penn's an enjoyable person. And we'll see what ends up happening in a few months, whether I can show up as less of me.
So, that is called Presto, How I Made Over 100 Pounds Disappear and Other Magical Tales. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. Brings us to our appetite. Speaking of food, our appetite, our app of the week. You have kids. You
know, I have kids.
I have kids as well. And boy, the kids these days, they love this app called Musical.ly.
My daughter, my youngest daughter particularly, really loves this.
Yeah, my 10-year-old is really, really loving Musical.ly.
So let's describe what Musical.ly is. It's an app that records you kind of lip singing and doing some facial movements and hand movements to a song, a pop song.
A pop song.
That they've kind of chipmunked.
Yeah.
They've kind of, you know.
Made it sound a little bit like the chipmunks are singing it. And your face is singing the song along with the chipmunk version of the music.
So as your smile changes, your eye movements, you squint, you move your hands around to kind of do finger motions and stuff. And you move the phone around to kind of move make it more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's recording you, and it makes it kind of a little short music video.
A little 20-second little version of the lip sync of that song.
And from that, you share it with your friends.
And they laugh and laugh and laugh. The kids just are loving this.
And what is so interesting about it is that it actually has some stick-to-itiveness.
Mm-hmm.
It's had some legs to it. It was introduced last year. As this app,
mm-hmm.
and it's still within the top 40 of apps to download this year. And there's actually a big article that was written about it on Fast Company, and that's what kind of brought it to mind, because my kids, my youngest plays, does this, I would say, fairly often.
Yeah, mine too.
And my oldest, who babysits, mm-hmm. Who's 14, by the way, she babysits, she has done it with the younger kids because they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has, you know, if it's a duet, you can kind of go back and forth.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting little app.
And it's so interesting how it is for the younger kids set right now, that the teenagers, my 14-year-old, your 14-year-old, don't really play with this. And those of you who are middle-aged people like us, you might not have even heard of Musical.ly if you don't have any contact with any kids.
Well, my sister-in-law does it.
Okay.
So, I mean, there are adults out there that play around with this.
Okay.
But what's interesting also is that this app did not start off as this little entertainment app. It originally started out as an app called Cicada.
For educational purposes. And they didn't make a go of it. And they found a way to pivot and make it really an interesting app that a lot of people love.
Yeah, Cicada was originally designed as an education app where, let's just say, Steve wanted to teach you something about computers.
Mm-hmm.
And he would make a 5-minute introduction video on how to do something with computers. That did not take off. Mm-hmm. So what is so amazing is that when something is not connecting with an audience, that the leadership says, okay, what can we do to make this more appealing?
Mm-hmm.
So Musical.ly, which is musical.ly, or you can find it in iOS or Google Apps or something like that, is an app that basically takes advantage of that. It lets the kid have fun.
Music is always fun. So many people forget how much music can be a part of your life. Kids love music. It appeals to both sides of their brain, the mathematical side and the creative side, and it just overtakes everything. You think of all those movies that if you took the music out, the movie would be a different experience.
The
music,
Big Chill.
The Big Chill. I was thinking more about Star Wars, but okay, The Big Chill.
I heard it on the grapevine.
That's right.
Heard it through the grapevine.
That was not in Star Wars. Musical.ly's out there. It's been downloaded millions of times. 10 million videos have been posted from it. And kids are just giggling when they get to see the results of their work. So there's so much to do. Let's get to our news for the week. Gawker. Oh boy. Gawker.com is closing up shop. They ran out of money. They got sued enough times by enough celebrities, and now they have no more interest in stalking.
The scary part is that Peter Thiel basically supported a lawsuit by Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
All you Hulksters out there.
Yeah.
And they had put together a sex tape, or they found one of Hulk Hogan. And Hulk Hogan won,
mm-hmm.
and basically put the business out of business.
And, you know, our society is going to be better off for it, I think.
Well, I think that, you know, this, they basically announced that they sold all the other websites off to Telemundo.
Mm-hmm.
So many of those websites will still be around. They'll just be under different leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But they may change. It may change a little bit about how this may be part of the maturing of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And which brings us up to Justin Bieber.
Mm-hmm.
And Justin Bieber shut down his Instagram page this week. And he had nearly 78 million followers.
And he just shut it down.
And he basically put out a note to say, listen, stop being mean to the people who are photographing themselves with me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't do that, then I'm going to opt out. And this is a good example. What's happening to Gawker and what Justin Bieber's response to basically some trolls.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that we may be maturing, where at one time, just any information we had on people that we had a little bit of celebrity. You're a writer, you're mm-hmm. an actress, you're an actor, you're a director or something. Somebody we never really would know, except for through like People Magazine or something.
Right.
We now are so intimate with their day-to-day lives that maybe there's this point of trying to draw that line. Maybe going, saying, listen, I'm willing to share me cooking a meal because I want you to see that I'm a human person.
Right.
But I don't want you following me into the restroom, or I don't want you to follow me into the local store as I try on socks or mm-hmm. whatever it is. This is an interesting little play. And I think this, what Justin Bieber's response is and what happened to Gawker is a good example of, like I said, the maturing of how we're going to be working with celebrity.
Because it's fine to admire a celebrity. I mean, we just talked about two. Penn Jillette is somebody we admire. And Alfred Hitchcock is somebody that we admire. But we're not going to go...
I don't think Penn wants me showing up at his home and knocking on the door.
Absolutely not.
But Penn's willing to share a lot of stuff with me.
And those things that he's willing to share, we're happy to read his book. We're happy to listen to him speak.
Sure.
But to follow him to the shopping mall, to take photographs of him, to prove that he was shopping at the shopping mall seems obnoxious.
Well, and it seems like you're violating something. They have children. They have grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
That private time, and to understand to the ability to be somewhat private, or have a public persona and a private persona, I think we're kind of missing a little bit of that.
I think the internet has changed a lot of that.
Sure. And just made it very easy,
mm-hmm.
especially with drones and stuff like that, to mm-hmm. you know, think of the extent that people go to now to ensure they have a private wedding or something of that nature.
Yeah. I think TMZ is next. I think we're ready to shut down some of these companies that are just stalking people.
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe there is a part of that the snarkiness
mm-hmm.
and this idea of just continuously cutting people down
mm-hmm.
is changing. Like I said, I think that as we've been on the internet for the 20 years we have,
25 for the World Wide Web,
we have gone through an arc, mm-hmm. and this right here may be a defining moment where we start putting together what we feel comfortable with.
And what netiquette will be. You know, we've changed what netiquette is many times in the last 25 years. And we're still adopting mm-hmm. the rules of this thing. We're still playing with it. It's still in its infancy.
Well, and let's think about also the Paris Hiltons, the Lindsay Lohans, the Kim Kardashians, who have created personas
mm-hmm.
that they may not be proud of right now. Not that they would deny them, but what I'm saying is, their lives were so open mm-hmm. and the drama around them was so open mm-hmm. that do they regret that? What allowed them to rise to stardom?
Being famous.
That we have that right now. Mm-hmm. But is that going to, you know, was it enough to create a career? For many of them, it is. But,
right.
But really, you know, we're changing.
We're changing. That is for sure. The science of what we're doing is changing. And boy, we can read all about it from NASA.
Well, we talked about it maybe last year. They're going to put all their documents on the internet. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they did on PubSpace.
Yeah. All their documents, right?
That's right.
So not the classified ones.
You mean the Stanley Kubrick stuff?
Don't open that Stanley Kubrick file. Don't look in that file. Everything else, we are an open book. You can read all about it.
Ladies and gentlemen, all the secrets. Well, no, I think what's going to be interesting is now that those documents are there, mm-hmm. Very, very WikiLeaks-like, that somebody's going to have to go through and going to have to put it in a way that's easy for us to digest, so mm-hmm. that we can get some stories that are kind of fun, either through the science of it, the personalities that were wrapped around it. We're going to get some fun stories. Who knows? Maybe we'll get a few movies out of it.
Well, Buzz Aldrin's just been a fun character for the entire time that we've known him publicly. So I'm sure there's some great Buzz Aldrin stories, and he'll...
Isn't that the one where he punched the kid for questioning? Oh, it's awesome. I swear. That's part of the public, the TMZ-ish way of doing things. The Gawker way of doing things.
That's right. Uber is putting autonomous cars on the road this year.
They're putting 100 autonomous cars. This was all those scientists that were hired by Uber mm-hmm. From Case Western
All those
University.
Robotics experts that are now working for Uber, getting me my autonomous car that I've been dreaming of.
So this is part of that big test. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about it is there's going to be two Uber employees in that vehicle. Mm-hmm. So one is supposed to be in the driver's seat, and while the car is driving itself, mm-hmm. this person is supposed to pay attention and know when to take hold of it if there was an emergency.
Kind of like the pilot in an airplane.
Why is there two? Maybe one to prod the other one just in
co-pilot.
Case.
The co-pilot, just in case the pilot eats some bad fish.
That's right. Something like that. Something like that.
It is. If you think about how airplanes work, the pilot is not necessary in an airplane anymore. That is a fully automated thing until the moment that it's not. So these two people in these Ubers are going to be very important, at least at the beginning of this process.
Sure. And this just seems like this is the next phase. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of this is that it looks like that here in Chicago, the entire Ohio Turnpike mm-hmm. That runs from Chicago all the way to the East Coast, that they're going to be, within the next 12 months, they're going to be testing some autonomous automobiles there too.
Yeah, that's going to be the next phase of all this, is that Ohio Turnpike. And boy, it makes you think that Ohio Turnpike is not going to be used for commuter traffic.
Well, it definitely seems like very much logistics. Mm-hmm. If I'm FedEx or UPS or bus or some kind of truck driver or something like that, if you think about many times they drive overnight and they're pushed to the limit as far as what humans can do. Mm-hmm. And it's a tough life to be on the road as mm-hmm. a truck driver. To have this move to, you know, driving itself, going from, you know, from the Target hub center here to the Target hub center at the other place, seems very desirable. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine a day that you jump on the bus here in Chicago, and it drives you all the way down to Orlando. You arrive
safely
the next morning.
And effectively.
You're in your little sleep cabin. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like your own personal train.
I am so ready for this future that we're building. I think that the truck drivers are going to be put out by this. I think the robots are taking our jobs. And I think that we're going to have a better society as a result.
Well, you know, truck drivers are not going away. They may be good for local stuff. But this is a very hard life for a lot of people.
Yep.
You know, they've talked about, you know, husband-wife teams being truck drivers because of the challenges it has. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the longevity of a truck driver is, but I would say it's probably less than 10 years.
Right.
Because of its lifestyle. This could really, really change things out, very much like trains change things in the old days. Mm-hmm. And airplanes change things. We are living in exciting times, and the beauty is their tests are right here, right now.
Right now. It's happening right now. I can imagine a time where these trucks are driving all night and then they stop, they get off of that highway, and then that highway's for commuters during the day. It's an amazing time we live in.
A lot of traffic. Hey, Steve, what if you were on Tatooine?
And there's not so many trucks on Tatooine.
There is not a lot of trucks on Tatooine.
A lot of hover cars.
Or few.
There's a few hover cars.
In between the moisture farms.
moisture farms.
As you dropped off your little guy, Luke, to his aunt and uncle.
What do you do for the next 15 or 20 years between that episode 3 where Luke is dropped off and episode 4 where he rediscovers a very grizzled Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Sure. And you were, and Obi-Wan, of course, was the person who was responsible for the rise of Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And your whole Jedi group obviously failed at understanding that Palpatine was the leader of the Sith.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably dark times for this guy.
This should be a movie, Chip. We should make a Star Wars story about Obi-Wan Kenobi and that long period of time in between Episode 3 and Episode 4.
Well, that seems like a lot of work. What if you just did a teaser trailer?
Somebody's done that. There's a fan teaser trailer available. It's in our show notes. You can look it up. It's really good. It leaves a lot to your imagination.
It looks like it needs a writer to go ahead and finish the story.
Let's put this down on paper. We need to make this story happen. It would be a really deep philosophical, lost in the desert for 15 years kind of story.
Sure, and then you got Qui-Gon showing up as a ghost all the time.
Right?
Just annoying you.
All those Force ghosts just showing up.
You failed me again, Obi-Wan.
That would be the whole story.
That's right. It'd be the nagging mom. Qui-Gon will play the nagging mom.
This is a fun little teaser trailer. There's so many creative people. This is a really creative thing that we're missing a piece of the story here.
And this is showing why the internet is so much fun.
This is where the internet's fun. Not Gawker and not worrying about celebrities and their socks. This is where the internet's fun, where we can make videos and put them out there.
Well, what if you were looking for someone, Steve?
I'm looking for Qui-Gon Jinn. Is he still yelling at Obi-Wan Kenobi? Oh, yeah, there he is. He's a ghost. What if you're looking for somebody like Carmen Sandiego? Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego, Chip?
Well, this gentleman went on a 20-year quest.
20 years.
Now, when this show was on PBS, they would introduce all the actors playing the parts, except for Carmen Sandiego.
That's right.
And this show, let's go back, it was a geography. It was a show designed around teaching young people about where things are in the world.
Right. Something that we are really, really in need of in the Americas, at least.
Yeah, I mean, we're not jumping from country to country. We know that going to L.A. means going west. Mm-hmm. We know that going to New York is going east.
We know that. I don't know if my 10-year-old knows that.
Well, this was a show that was looking to help out with stuff like that. But the actors that played it and the actress that played Carmen Sandiego, our bad guy that we always had to go find, was never really revealed during that time.
Wow.
And ultimately was kept hidden. But he found her.
Right. Somebody found her. 20 years later, her name is Janine LaManna, and she had an interview talking about being Carmen Sandiego.
Now, I'll give you some fun parts about this, because it makes it very Carmen Sandiego-ish. It seems like she got married to a military gentleman who is on a lot of secret missions.
He's on secret missions, and she's there with him in a big red hat.
Now, Janine, she's going to get back into, hopefully get back to Broadway or acting. She was a Broadway actress, and so she did that, and she was also part of this show.
Mm-hmm.
She played a number of parts on the Carmen Sandiego show, but really, she did not set up a Facebook profile.
Right.
She never set up an Instagram or Twitter. She said there was no real reason for her to, so she basically became a ghost.
That's awesome.
She became a Carmen Sandiego.
What would a spy do? That's what a spy would do.
And it shows you how you can be a virtual ghost in a very digital world.
Mm-hmm.
If you choose to.
If you choose to. You have to make that choice. And you have to make sure that nobody makes that choice for you. There's so many celebrities that are good at this. And then there's other celebrities that are they're being hounded by these people.
This is a wonderful exploration of what she was up to, her experience during the show, and the ability to yell, do it, Rockapella.
That's right.
And get that show started. First of all, if you've never seen the show, what a fun young show it was at the time. And HBO, if you're listening, this would be a good show to bring back.
Of all the shows that are being rebooted right now, why aren't they making this one happen? Because we still live in a world where geography is not really a study that we have well enough for our American children.
Well, geography, and you know, we can think of Reading Rainbow also, which we are getting some different shows.
Yep, they rebooted that one.
Through a Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, my HBO... Go ahead and grab them.
Yeah. They put on The Electric Company, too. They grabbed all those reboots of The Electric Company. They're putting those on HBO.
Hey, you guys.
Oh, that's so great. I love all that stuff. I watch so much PBS. I watched it all growing up, and I still watch it now because I don't have cable.
Because there was only four channels at the time.
I love it. I love that stuff.
PBS here in Chicago, with WTTW, I think you have four channels.
Mm-hmm.
Four different channels.
Yep.
And then you also have the other...
the other channel, the other PBS, WYCC.
Yes.
And they have at least three.
So that's also an amazing...
Why do I need cable? That's not what we're talking about. That's not what we're talking about, but that's part of this whole conversation, is PBS is awesome. You can find all the information that you need right there on PBS. But I think, Chip, we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week.
Yeah, I think we can come back next week. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find it. Give us a phone call. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Send us an email. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can find all the news that you need on our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflug.
We'll see you in the future.